Hello, I'm here during the lunch rush with Janice, who owns her own food truck.
Best cheesesteaks in town.
Janice traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for her food truck business. We're here where she needs us most.
They sure are.
We make it so easy for her to save, with customised coverage that grows with her business. Sorry, I just get so emotional talking about saving folks money.
Not this onion I'm chopping?
It's just so beautiful. Oh, yeah, nice, the onion.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. It feels good to Geico.
Happy birthday, Breaking Math. I'm Autumn FNAF.
And I'm Noah Chauncey-Cusa.
This show turns 9 years old this year, which honestly feels a little unreal. Over the past 9 years, we've crossed more than 5 million downloads. And depending on which platform you ask, it may be somewhere north of 7.3 million listens total. So this number catches me a bit off guard because the show originally started as a small, curious experiment with two people in grad school with a love of math. If you've listened to the show for a while, you may have noticed some big changes that have gone on behind the scenes. Gabriel Hesch, my former co-host and business partner, built the show from the very beginning, and he has officially retired from hosting. Gabriel shaped the heart of this show for so many years, and I wanted to thank him for the foundation that he built and the conversations that we have been able to have together. So you also might have noticed for a while that I was doing the show solo, and that was a season of experimenting, figuring out what the next chapter needed to be. And now we've stepped into year 9. I want to grow the platform again and the show. Did you notice that there was a new intro for some voice that you might have actually noticed in the past on the show? So I am incredibly excited to welcome my very dear friend and new co-host, Noah Chauncey-Cusa. So Noah's a mathematician, author, public thinker who has spent years helping people understand algorithms, data, and mathematical systems, which quietly shape our lives. So most importantly, he's someone who asks generous questions and is not afraid to sit with uncertainty. This episode is a bit of an origin story, not just for Noah and me as co-hosts, but for where Breaking Math is headed next. So if you've been here since the beginning, thank you. And if you're new here, welcome. You're arriving at a really good moment. Let's jump in.
Well, Autumn, I am so pleased to be here. I have to say, you had me on your show as a guest over the summer, and I just left saying that was an awesome experience. I loved getting to know you, getting to know your show. Then we became friends and you're sending these messages saying, oh, I really wish I had a new co-host. And I was saying, oh, I really wish I had a platform like you have. And we just realized, why don't we just give it a try? And so here we are.
I mean, I knew within 5 minutes, I'll be honest. I was like, this is an instantaneous click.
Let's zoom in. Why do we think that? I'll put in my words. I want to hear your words. For me, I think we're both very conversational. Like, we really like to chat, and math isn't just a static thing that's lectured or read in books, but it's really lives and breathes through conversations. And I really felt that when I was on your show. And I think that's to me one of the main connections is just we're very conversational people.
Absolutely. It's also when you meet a guest on the show or somebody in general, it's how well do you click? And personality-wise, we started automatically chatting before the episode, which some guests are very chatty. Some people just want to go in and I'm like, wait, he's local. I want to get to know this dude because I don't have a lot of mathematician friends that are within this realm doing public speaking data. And also the science communication community is super small. Mm-hmm. So that matters.
And I'll say on the side of being an author and doing these kind of publicity things, it does get kind of exhausting and even a little demoralizing if you think of it purely as like publicity for a book. Because one thing I've learned, it's really hard to sell books. And if that's what you're aiming for, it can be a little depressing. So I've just found the better perspective, for me at least, is to think, This is an opportunity to meet new people. Every time I go on a show, that's a person that after the episode, I know I feels like one of my contacts, maybe, you know, in some cases a friend. So with us, it was kind of the extreme instance of that. But I just love thinking of these shows as a way of broadening your network and getting to know people. And that often includes listeners. I love when people reach out and write and say what they liked, what they didn't like, what they want to learn, what really helped them. So I feel like I get to know the listeners as well.
Absolutely. So first and foremost, a little note for the listeners, as we are going to be expanding the show. So there's a couple ways now for listeners to interact. We have a Substack. I will be building that platform out for a newsletter and also for folks to comment for questions. The second one will be our Patreon. And we are hoping to actually restart our Patreon, which has been dead for quite some time, where if folks come onto the platform, they get to interact with us as a community. We're going to have questions and answers for people. We want to hear from folks. And also, you can email us anytime if you have a question on the show at breakingmathpodcast@gmail.com.
And we love, love, love all these kinds of interactions. Because again, that, you know, the show should be interactive and it's dynamic and organic. So you are a part of it, all of your listeners, as much as we are.
Yes, absolutely. And we really want to be able to grow the math and science communication aspect of the show. So we know that it's not only just the authors that we've had on the show. There's other problems that we're going to be tackling throughout this new season.
Speaking of the new season, I'm a new co-host, and I'd like to get to know you a little better. And I think you'd like to get to know me a little better.
I think we know each other off camera pretty well.
I'm sure there's plenty of surprises left in store. So
Of course. Especially after learning that you have 12 chickens.
Well, you know, let's play a game and let's ask each other a few questions. You have been a co-host for a while, but now you have this new title. I forget the official thing. You're the CEO of Breaking Math. I was going to say Breaking Bad. Not quite.
See, that's actually where the show was started, was Breaking Bad.
Well, so excellent show. So I think it's an excellent start.
Yes.
So I always thought it was breaking news about math. And now I realize you're just talking about math and math. But that makes sense. Okay, moving on. So I want to get to know you. You are now the CEO of this media company behind Breaking Math. So what are the things you're most excited about moving into this role where you have a lot more kind of power to shape things beyond just in the chair in your conversation?
Behind the camera, most people didn't realize that I actually am a media and tech consultant, along with being an engineer. As I'm formalizing Breaking Math as more of a media company and not just a podcast, that means that we have clearer editorial vision, better production workflows, stronger partnerships with other associations outside of here. But that also, for me, investing in storytelling. That might be better audio, better visuals, and more of a narrative cohesion across platforms. I'm also having the ability to dive deeper and wider into some topics. So with that, you might see me doing a talk about science communication or working with other people, whether it's authors or illustrators. I've worked on various media over time. So being able to shape the needs of the community that we're working with and also expanding other things for future science communicators, I'm really hoping to do that without telling a lot of details right now.
Well, I think we'll discover those details as we go.
Yes.
But I just want to zoom on it. I mean, and that sort of narrative coherence, I think just from our conversations, to give a little more detail on that, we might see some series of episodes that connect with similar themes. We might see some episodes that really focus on the theme and draw on multiple guests to really zoom in rather than kind of a one episode, one guest. But we're absolutely going to continue the one episode, one guest interview format. So we're going to keep doing everything we did, but we're going to try some new things. And if it works, we keep it. And if it doesn't, we toss it. Got to do the experiment and collect the data.
Now, something for you that I'm curious about as you've just joined the show, you spent a lot of time helping people understand how math shapes their lives. What feels different this time now that you're working on the show as my co-host and you're not just a professor and author anymore?
Well, I would say it's kind of the power dynamic where, unfortunately, and I do mean this unfortunately, as a professor, you're kind of put on this pedestal and the students are your disciples. And I want to have great conversations in the classroom. And sometimes that happens, but it's difficult because I do, at the end of the day, have to grade them. And it creates this power dynamic. And even as an author, you're kind of viewed as this expert that's imparting information onto your readers. And I love to think of them as equals and I'm just talking to them, but it's still you are the author. What's different here is I think we're equals. Like, you and I are just friends in the room that want to understand what's going on. And we don't go into these episodes necessarily as experts in the subject. We go as intellectually curious people who want to learn it together and explore it. So I really feel like I'm on the same page and equal with you. But even with our guests, I feel like our guests are equals as well. No one is lecturing to anyone else. No one is in that position of power. We're just trying to learn and understand the world. And that's what our listeners are too. So I think we're all kind of the same in this. And that's really fun to me.
I think that you made a good point about professors being on this pedestal. And I have to tell the students this. It's going to be a spoiler alert. We do not know everything.
Yep. Absolutely.
And we like diving deep into questions. And I think that that is essentially the best thing about somebody who is a teacher, because they like to be able to tell a story for everything.
And story is what it's at. In fact, I was at a conference recently, the big joint math meetings conference that happens once a year. This one was in D.C. And someone asked me a question of how has doing this kind of public facing math communication, how has that impacted your research writing? And I said, you know, it hasn't changed my research that much, but my teaching it has. And they said, oh, how's it changed your teaching? And I said, I realized teaching is so much about storytelling that if I just go in and I try to spoon feed information to my students, it's hard, right? They're not that motivated. They think they just have to memorize it for a test. It doesn't feel organic. But if I give them an exciting story, if I tell them about some event in the world that happened and they get sucked in, and then I say this math formula or this statistical concept is the key to understand that thing, then they're engaged and they're drawn in. And that's how I've learned to write. My editor has told me this. I wrote a chapter on Bayes' formula, and the editor said, you can't just start with a formula. Like, no, that doesn't work in this kind of writing. You have to start with a story where the formula is like the big reveal that explains what's happening. And that made so much sense in hindsight. And then I realized that's what teaching needs too. We need to catch students' attention and their interest first, and then the content flows more naturally. So storytelling, I think the more I'm aging into whatever I'm becoming, the more I'm realizing storytelling just permeates everything that we do. And it's so essential.
So was there a moment that you actually realized that you didn't just love math, but you wanted to talk about it?
Yeah, I'm glad you're asking, because it was a very like discreet moment. You know, I think with that question, one could easily kind of pretend and force it, but this is fully authentic what happened. So we had my first child. She's now 7. So for a year or two, I wasn't traveling much, you know, conferences. Then the pandemic started. So another couple of years wasn't traveling much. So now we're getting to like 4 or 5 years where I just have not gone to conferences at all. And in that time, I'd written a book that was about the math behind some aspects of misinformation, fake news, blah, blah, blah. Don't need to get into that now. The point was, it was out of my typical lane of pure math research. And it was something that really touched on more like media studies and news information ecosystem. So I wrote that book not as an expert, but as someone who's just trying to understand it and explain how math is involved in this. Then after a few years, a couple of years past peak pandemic time, I got invited to this conference. And it wasn't a math conference. It was like a, I won't say media conference, but it was like an information studies conference. There were politicians, journalists, scholars, but no mathematicians. So this was my first time ever going to a conference that was not a math conference. In fact, I was the only one out of like 100 people that was not a mathematician. So it was a strange experience. And it ended up being really transformative and almost magical, where when I go to a math conference, you know, we're all doing the same thing. We're trying to prove theorems. We're sharing our information, our insights. And that's great. I enjoy that. But this was so different, because I gave this talk where I was trying to explain how like social media algorithms work, the math behind them. And this woman from the BBC came up and said, I've taught media literacy for like 20 years, and I finally see the missing piece of the puzzle that I wasn't understanding, which is how these algorithms work. Everyone always said, oh, it's too complicated. We have no chance of understanding it. It's just, you know, these black boxes. And you finally said like, no, this is basically how these algorithms work. And she just found it so eye-opening. And I had all these conversations with people that are just like, wow, this is really meaningful. And it just helped me realize that when I speak math to other math people, whether they're professors or students or anyone, I really enjoy it. But there's something really special about speaking math or helping people even beyond the math world understand math. It's a real chance to kind of open their eyes and help them understand something that they really thought they had no chance of understanding. And that's the moment where I thought, let me just go for this and communicate math.
That is a skill and also such a critical tool to have in your toolbox. That's for anybody. And it doesn't matter on what subject matter, because the moment that you step into that platform or talking about something that you love and just making it very accessible, especially for algorithms, for mathematics, mm-hmm. these are things that people actually need. And it yeah. doesn't matter whether that's your understanding your Spotify algorithm and why it selects the songs that it does, because it's not really random. Yep. I swear, it really isn't. Or even like YouTube algorithm for what you want to see next, or your FICO score. All of that plays into effect on how we're shaping our lives.
And I get so tired of the kind of haves and have-nots view that like, oh, there's the quantitative mathy people. We're all allowed to understand how all this stuff works. And everyone else who's not a math person just has to be, you know, in the dark and guessing, and we have no agency in understanding. I think that's so frustrating and limiting, and perhaps even a little deliberate. I think we all have a chance to understand these things. Basically, if math touches someone's life, I think they have almost a human right to understand the outlines, at least, the contours of that math. But let me ask you a question, Autumn, because you've asked me a couple here. So, and it's kind of related, which is when I was first getting to know you and getting to know the show, I thought, okay, Breaking Math, this is a math podcast, so, you know, we'll talk math. Then I started looking through the episodes, and plenty of them involve plenty of math. I was amazed how many episodes were with people that I would say are not mathematicians, or at least not traditional mathematicians. And this continues. I've been watching here recently, philosophers, political scientists, artists, just everything. So my question for you is, why does a math podcast venture so far beyond math in the traditional sense?
If you're treating math as if it's a gated community, you're either good at it or you're not. And especially having taught in a classroom, especially with people that have different backgrounds and lives, because in real life, math is everywhere. And the decisions that are being made for people, whether that's algorithms, finance, policy, medicine, climate models, that information spreads online. So if we only talk to mathematicians, we miss the point completely on the audience that we're trying to reach. When I started the show, when I was having these initial conversations with Gabe, I said, where do you want to go? What do you want to do? And we kind of came to this chaos of how the world works. And it's messy, it's interdisciplinary, and it's embedded in human choices. So the moment that you humanize mathematics, humanize STEM fields, it changes the conversation. Because if we take it from the point of someone who's being a theoretical mathematician, I love y'all, I do. But being able to talk about those concepts and being able to bring this back to the conversations that we need to have, it suddenly changes the system. And you're not just reacting to the world, you're actually able to start questioning it and the decisions and choices that we have to make. So that's kind of why I like to do all of these crazy topics, because sometimes there's a core math question. You wouldn't think of talking to a philosopher like Tinu Yen, mm-hmm. how he would just be able to talk about games, game theory, scoring and ranking systems. What?
Yeah.
What sort of conversation was this? Even he talks about what? D&D. Being able to take those topics and bring it back to a mathematical concept just makes your world a lot more honest.
That's fantastic.
And it's kind of why I like doing what I do and bringing on people, guests, and choices that I make on here. And sometimes it might be controversial, so buckle up.
Yeah, we're fine with that.
Yes. So that's kind of something that I've always loved to do. Now, I'm curious for topics that you want to cover as we're going through this, right? Is there something that a math podcast that you are aware of or something that you really want to dive into that hasn't been taken serious yet in the public eye?
You know, I mean, my answer is a little similar to what you just said, which is I kind of love topics that don't seem like they're going to involve math, that come from other areas. And what we're going to do is dig in and find the math that's there. Almost like Freakonomics was this very popular book, 20 years ago, that kind of uncovered these hidden patterns through data. I think there's a lot of similar things we can do with math, where there's things that topics, like you said, philosophy and art and all these wide-ranging things, where they don't sound like they're mathematical, but I think it's really fun and interesting and sometimes helpful and powerful to find that there is math there. So I would say not necessarily a topic. I don't want to pin myself to a specific one, But I think there is a lot of opportunity to find things that people don't realize are as mathy as they are. Or another way to put it is I think math is really a lens. It's a way of thinking. And I think we're going to apply that perspective and that way of thinking to a lot of topics and see what it says about those topics.
As mathematicians, it is a public service that we're doing to be able to just dive deep into something, whether or not we know the answer. If not, we find somebody who is an expert in the topic that should know the answer, or we source that out one way or another.
You know, that's something I've found when I've, because I do, as I mentioned, this media conference I went to, and I've gone to other conferences in other fields. Something I will humbly brag about the math community. I think we're very good at admitting that there's a lot we don't know, because in math, there are famously open problems that, you know, no one has ever solved and maybe no one ever will. There are really hard problems. And you just kind of go into math knowing like, okay, I'm going to know some tiny piece of math and there'll be a huge amount that I don't know. And that's fine. Whereas I think in a lot of other disciplines, there's pressure if you're an expert, like if you're a historian, you should know what happened. You know, you should know the history. And I think mathematicians are just really good at understanding that our job is not to know everything, but is to recognize the limits of what we know and what we don't, and to push that boundary. And I've just found, like, I go to these conferences and people are like, oh, you know, they're really impressed with my ability to field questions. And I say, it's just because I don't feel like I have to know the answers. My favorite answer to give is, that's an amazing question. Absolutely. You know, let's think about that some more. I don't know the answer. My favorite answer is, I don't know the answer. And I don't see enough people saying that or admitting that, but it's fun and it's liberating. So let me turn it to a little bit more personal. I heard you have a roommate. Do you want to tell us about your roommate?
He is very opinionated.
Okay.
And he has more attitude than the both of us put together. So I have a dachshund, blue heeler mix. His name is Dash. Actually, Sir Dash Vector Pixel Pie, if you really want to get into his name. And he is a little hellion. And when I'm reading my books or whatever, he is attached by the hip. Currently, we are dealing with topology in our backyard, a little bit of a problem right now. And he has the instinctive dachshund personality of I will tunnel and I will find something. But we currently have about, I would say, almost a meter of snow.
Yes, we do.
So we have a vole underground, which comes out in the winter, and he is tunneling under the snow into the yard to find the vole.
That's impressive, I guess.
It is very impressive. So his dachshund and herding instincts are very, very strong. And if he is not liking whatever we tell him to do, you may hear him on camera, or he may stop in behind the scenes at some point. So he has stopped in with multiple guests mid-interview. And I'm like, all right, we got to cut this out. But do you want to meet the dog?
But maybe now we don't have to cut it out.
Maybe we don't have to cut it out, but you will see the curtains moving behind me.
I see. That's what that is.
And it is often, yeah, because it's going to block him out of my recording space.
Well, so, part of why I'm asking you that, I know it's kind of silly. One thing that came up as a teacher, I don't know if you had this experience, but it came up a lot in my university during the pandemic, is students really liked getting to see that we, meaning like professors, teachers, are human beings, that we're real people.
Yes.
That if we just show up and kind of lecture and disappear and have office hours, you know, it just doesn't feel organic, like we're a human. So sometimes when we're Zooming and our kids would come in, they see our dining room or living room or whatever, the kids would run in. It just made us feel like we're people doing our best. And the students have so many challenges they're dealing with, you know, emotional and physical and all these things. And it kind of helped them to see, like, you know what? My professors are humans and they have a lot of challenges that they're dealing with. And we are humans. And it just kind of bridged the gap to realize we're all humans just doing our best, dealing with the difficult times that we live in. So I think, you know, this is important to kind of show our raw human side and the pets that we have. I think just exposing ourselves as real people, as podcast hosts, as teachers, as guests, as everything, I think is really nice, because it just makes us all feel like we're kind of the same. You know, the differences are interesting, but the commonalities are interesting as well.
Now, you have a lovely little extra roommate, or quite a few.
Right. Well, yeah, of different sizes and calibers.
One that's
not so little. We have a Great Pyrenees, or we thought she was a Great Pyrenees. We adopted her from a rescue, and we've had Great Pyrenees in the past, and we know their personality type, and we thought, this works for us. We got one that is the size of a Great Pyrenees, which, if you don't know, very large, like 100 pounds for the female. The male's can be quite a bit bigger. So very, very large dog. But the energy level, the curiosity, the playfulness, the personality of more like a lab or golden or like very, very energetic wild. So we did a DNA test and found out she is about half Pyrenees and half a whole bunch of like sheepdog kind of things that are energetic and intelligent. So
she's so cute.
She's very cute, very sweet, very playful, but she is different than we were expecting. And that's just part of life.
Yep.
And the other animals is we have, what are we up to now? About 12 chickens. We just got a couple more young ones because our older ones stopped laying. So I was talking to one of my neighbors a couple days ago. They have chickens. And it turns out we both got chickens right at the beginning of the pandemic. It seemed like a great idea. This would be really fun. We were getting eggs. And then pandemic, it turns out, was like 7 years ago. And it turns out chickens stop laying eggs after a few years. So now us and this neighbor and probably many other people in around the world have chickens dating back to the pandemic that no longer lay eggs that none of us really know what to do with. And we're all stuck with these pandemic chickens. But, you know, that's life.
I did not know that about chickens.
Yeah. They go, oh, you're going to love the term. What is it called when a chicken reaches the age? You know, they're all female we're talking about, where they no longer lay eggs.
Any guesses? I don't know.
Henopause. There we go. So our listeners have learned something new. Not math, but something new.
Not math. Not math.
Henopause.
Henopause. Henopause. I cannot wait to go to Tractor Supply and look at all the ducks and the chickens in a few weeks.
Oh, my wife really wants to get ducks, and they're so adorable, but they need water, and they are the messiest little critters, but I'm sure no matter how hard I fight, we were going to end up with ducks at some point in my life, and I'll just have to accept that fate.
You might just magically find them showing up at your house one day.
You came up with a great, when we were sort of brainstorming the show, we tried to each come up with some questions, and you came up with a really excellent one that I'm going to steal and ask you instead.
Uh-oh.
But feel free to ask me back in return. What does success look like for you? You know, thinking 1, 3, 5 years down the future, like how would you know that you've been successful either with the show or just with your career more broadly?
Ooh, those are two different answers.
Then give us both if you can, or pick one.
So for the show, I actually want to go up in our rankings. That is one thing.
Let's do it.
Not just variety of guests, but also looking at cool topics, scaling all of our social medias. Those are tangible metrics.
Well, you heard that, listener, so you can help us out, right? You can subscribe. You can recommend the podcast. You can share it with your friends, with your colleagues. So help us get Autumn's dream for the show. We can do it together.
We're currently somewhere between number one and number two in mathematics right now. Our main competition is BBC. We have ranked, when we change our feed, we're probably about number 17 in tech news.
We can do better than that.
Yes. We've also, over time, we've gone up to as high as like 12 in science. So I need the listeners' help to recommend the show for new episodes. We're trying to start afresh with this new season, to rank it as high as possible and to just do cool things, have a lot more cool collaborations. And I'm hoping to also expand on the video side professionally. That is very different. There's a lot of different things. It's just creating opportunity and space for myself, for me, not just only as the host for the show here, but also looking at what I want to do, if I still want to be a professor, if I want to be an author, I want to do more science communication without burning out in all areas. That's essentially where I want to go. How that looks, whether that's been, I've worked at magazines, I've worked in publishing, I've worked in tech and blockchain, hoping to potentially do more stuff in AI. That stuff matters. So essentially moving forward in one way or shape or another. And the biggest thing that I have learned is don't put yourself in a box and find something that fulfills you, because the thing that might fulfill you, the world is rapidly changing. Technology is changing. Some higher educational institutions are crumbling for lots of different reasons. Colleges close. Colleagues retire. Some of my favorite people have retired. So knowing what fulfills you doesn't always mean that it's a job. It's surrounding yourself with a good support system. Mm-hmm. And just knowing what's going to look like. Success doesn't always have a metric. It's how you feel. And I think that's what matters.
Let me zero in, because I said a quote and you weren't there, so there's no way you knew. So this is just serendipity that you used almost verbatim the same phrasing.
Hey.
It's just how it feels.
So mind readers.
I was at this, as I mentioned, this joint math meetings, and another question I received, actually wasn't even a question, it was just part of a talk I was giving. I was giving some advice for people who may math oriented people who may want to go into kind of public writing, public communication, public facing stuff. And there's so many things you can do. Like, you can get really into social media. Some people don't write books and they don't do newspaper op-eds, but, you know, they have a whole social media platform presence. Some people do podcasting, some newspaper, some, you know, there's so many different things you can try that are all ways of communicating math and science to the public. So the question is like, do you do everything? Do you just do something? What do you do? And I said, just try lots of things, but be really open to listening to the feedback, to how it feels. And I said, think of it like reinforcement learning, this, you know, concept in that's used a lot in AI. Try things. And if it feels good, do more of it. And if it feels bad, do less of it. So I used to do more social media, and then some things changed with social media ecosystem. And I stopped enjoying as much. So I haven't done as much. But I guarantee that things will change and I'll find a way to do it that I enjoy more. I've found that I enjoy more speaking, and this podcasting is another example. But I really, you can't measure success in any, or I think you shouldn't measure it in a predefined way of like, I'm going to be a successful, a famous author, or I'm going to be, you know, have a 200,000 following on TikTok or YouTube. If you try to come up with these metrics ahead of time, you're kind of setting yourself up for disappointment because you may not enjoy that journey to there. You may not even enjoy the destination. But if you just say, I'm going to try lots of things, and if I enjoy what I'm doing, I'm going to do more of it, and I'll find ways to keep doing more of it and explore those directions, I think that's just the key. So I really think it's reinforcement learning based on how you feel, not based on some numbers that are defining your success.
Precisely. And I've noticed that because if you set such a high goal, it's not getting the goal. It's what's the next metric, right? Mm-hmm. And it's the journey that you're taking to get the thing that you want, but also finding the people and support system. So I'll take this question and throw it back at you. What does success look like for you in general, whether that's the show, whether that's personal life, because you're no longer just Professor Noah.
Yeah. You know, the thing that I've found that means the most to me in any endeavor I've tried, whether that's teaching, being a podcast guest, being a podcast host is a newish thing to me. Writing, everything I've tried, the thing that means the most to me and really matters is when I hear from readers or listeners of any way, like that really matters to me, that people take the time just to say anything. Even if it's like, hey, this is, you know, I enjoyed your episode, but this one thing, you know, I wish you brought up this or explained it. Like, even if it's a critique or complaint, that's fine. I kind of enjoy that. It means they paid attention. They cared enough to want what I'm doing to be a little bit better, to offer some feedback. But my absolute favorite thing that means the most to me is when they say something I said, like really help them understand some part of their life. Like you had mentioned credit scores earlier. If I was doing some episode, like I was on Yahoo Finance a few weeks ago, and someone afterwards just emailed me and say, hey, I saw you on the show, and it really helped. Now I kind of feel like I understand FICO credit scores finally. That kind of thing, it just matters so much. And that can happen through podcasting, through writing, through social media, but just helping people understand, because I do think we're in a world that is very complicated, very mathy, very intimidating. And to help people have a sense of like, you know what, I can understand. I know how this thing works. I'm able to. Like, it's not my fault that I can't understand. It just hasn't been explained clearly and well and enticingly enough to me. So to get people to realize it's not their own limitation if they're not understanding, it's that they haven't found the right voice that really works for them. Precisely. It just means so much to me. So I'll take that wherever I can get it. I'm just going to keep going. So I don't care, you know, if I'm an author or a podcast, whatever it is, as long as I feel like I'm reaching people and helping them understand parts of their life and the world that matter to them a little bit more clearly, then I'm doing that's success to me.
Wonderful. Anything that you want to add?
I am so excited to be part of this. I feel a big debt of gratitude to Gabe for launching the show, for working with you. I feel almost a little ashamed that I didn't have a chance to really overlap with him and learn from him directly, but I think he's imparted a lot of the experience and wisdom to you, and you're helping, you know, bring me into it. So I feel like there is this connection to Gabe. To the listeners, I feel a little bit like there's a lot of pressure. Like, it's different when you start a new podcast where you just go and do your thing, and if people like it, they come, and if they don't like it, they leave. But here, there is a devoted fan base, and I feel like if I come in and I mess things up and I do it differently or change it, I might alienate people who've been enjoying the show maybe for 9 years. So I do feel there's a little bit of pressure, but I think that's good pressure that's going to push me to not be complacent and to really try to think about what I can bring, what are my strengths, how I can help the show, help it grow, connect with listeners. So I do feel pressure more than I have in most other endeavors I've done, but I think that's good.
I don't want to say that there's any sort of pressure for you.
Well, you can say that, but I can feel it.
You can feel the pressure. So for me, I will say this, you are so incredibly brilliant in other areas that I am not.
So
it's I don't want to say it's intimidating. It's just different.
Well, okay, I have to pause and interrupt. Okay. I really don't want to interrupt you, but I just have to say what's great about co-hosting is it's so complimentary. Like, we don't have to be the same person. We don't have to know the same things. We each bring things to the table. We bring brilliance in many different forms. And I think that's awesome. One question we both were toying with and didn't quite bring up in the episode, but we'll just kind of mention here is like, how are you excited? Like, what are you excited about having a co-host experience like this? And I think it's exactly what you're saying. The other person brings so much brilliance that we individually may not have had the chance to develop.
Precisely.
So whatever you say about me, I feel the same about you. We're very similar. I think we have a lot of compatibility, but I'll just give our listeners an example. Autumn loves to prepare thoughtfully, thoroughly, carefully, and that is wonderful. I love to improvise, and I don't know if that's good or bad, but it's just my nature. So I like to kind of be fresh, and I think we're different in that regard, and I think that's great. I think you know a lot of engineering, a lot of applied things that I don't know as well. I think we both bring a lot of experience. You know a lot of media and marketing and branding. I know a little bit of writing stuff, but you're writing a book or multiple books, as I know. So I think it's great. We both bring different things to the table, and that's fun.
I think, yes, it's that. And also the behind-the-scenes nerdiness that no one actually knows about is very interesting. This isn't just a light. It's a lightsaber.
If you honestly think your listeners don't know about your nerdiness, I don't think you're being honest with yourself. The first thing I did when I was like going to join the show is I go to the webpage for Breaking Math and they have the about me. So I click on Autumn, like, oh, I want to know about Autumn. You're sitting in this like giant Star Wars chair, maybe with a dog or something. I can't remember. It's almost cosplay, or at least it's like bordering on it.
No. Do you know what that? I'm going to take you there.
Okay.
So that's Salem.
Okay. All
so
right.
That's Salem. That's a Blackcraft cult.
It's so you're saying this in a way of like trying to convince me you're less nerdy? I'm missing a point here.
See, my friend did not. Actually, the story was I went to a nerd convention that day.
Okay. QED. Your listeners know we're both nerds.
Now my friends, now not just my friends and fan
now
base.
The world
now.
Knows.
Noah and I are Magic the Gathering nerds.
Oh, no, you're bringing me into this.
I'm bringing you into
this. I have a public reputation that you're tarnishing here.
And you'll see me with a little ghost and a few of my other profile pictures. Someone will find it on my Twitter archive. Don't worry, because somebody backed up my whole Twitter on the blockchain.
I think the punchline is neither of us hide our nerdiness. We embrace it.
Yes, it's learning to embrace it. So if anyone asks, my lights are secretly lightsabers, but don't throw them at anything. But anyways.
I think it was a chance for our listeners to get to know us more. And, you know, when I was looking into researching the show, let's say, as a considering being a co-host, I thought the show is awesome. I really love it. I watched the recent episodes where you're solo hosting. And I said, these are great. Your questions are so thoughtful. I think you really like read the books and understand the authors. They're really interesting. But my one like comment, you know, bordering on criticism, but, you know, productive criticism is I think when you just ask questions, it's not as strong as when you really like bring your personality in and have conversations and talk and like be yourself. So I promise listeners, I'm really going to try to pressure Autumn to let the guards down, bring yourself in more and just be yourself. Show us the lightsabers.
Noah,
we come for that.
If you caught me at the same nerdy level that my students catch me at, I might be thrown off a platform.
We'll see. We'll have to find out. That sounds like a challenge. But I think that's fun. And that's part of the spirit of the show is just to explore and, you know, to not view math in a specific topic, not in a specific light. That it's just math, I think, really is about curiosity and trying to understand the world and thinking about things and being comfortable with uncertainty and being excited, right? Like math, I'll honestly say math is very, very hard. And if you're not excited and you're not having fun, it's not worth it. Like it's not worth the effort. So I think we got to have fun. We got to enjoy the journey. That's what it's all about.
All right. So now y'all know how much of a nerd I am behind the scenes. And he is now determined to bring it out.
Well, I said, bring out your personality. You can choose what side of that doesn't mean all nerd all the time.
It's going to be at that level.
All right.
So for listeners, if you are still here at this point, ways that you can interact for the show for future episodes, we will be doing lots of Q&As. So we're hoping that you get more involved.
And we want show ideas.
Yes.
We don't want to just tell you what's interesting. We want you to tell us what you're interested in and hear about it so we can explore it.
And potentially, if we have a really awesome guest coming on, we want you to be able to chat with them mm-hmm. in some way or ask questions in advance. So we know what you are going to tell us. So connect with us on Patreon, connect with us on Substack. You can send us an email as well at breakingmathpodcast@gmail.com. And all of that information's also going to be in the show links. We'll have it blasted on all of our social medias. And we're hoping to hear from you and interact with you folks as much as possible. And we'll try to respond. We get a lot of emails. So we try to respond to everything, but sometimes we just don't always have that bandwidth because Noah and I also have other jobs too.
And dogs.
And dogs and chickens.
Yeah. I'll give you some of my chickens to balance it out.
Yep. Actually, I have them next door to me, so no worries.
Okay, you have enough. All
right, no worries. On. So until next time, folks, I'm Autumn FNAF.
And I'm Noah John Syracusa.
And always stay curious and stay informed for the world around you.